3, 5, 6, 7. I think we've got a quorum. Ha ha! The time is 1:30. It's time for the Monterey Bay Air Resources District Board of Directors meeting, Wednesday, December 15th, 2021. I want to welcome everybody. We are conducting this meeting remotely based on Governor Newsom's signature of AB 361. We invite the public's participation. I want to thank everybody's patience as we are still in a pandemic. With that, let's go ahead and call for the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's see, Rich, you want to lead us? Great.
Yes. Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thanks. Okay, Siri, would you like to call the roll?
Yes, sir. Director Dillis.
Here.
Director Phillips.
Here.
Chair McChain.
Here.
Director Lopez. Come back. Director Labar.
Present.
Thank you. Director Friend.
Here.
Director Coonerty.
Here.
Director Carbone. Director Carbone. Director Kosamiki.
Here.
Director Eskew. Director Eskew. Okay, I'll go one more time. Director Story.
Here.
Director Lopez.
You betcha.
Thank you. Director Carbone. Not yet. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So we do have quorum, sir.
Great. Well, one of the best parts of the year, an opportunity for this board to rally is when it comes to recognition of our district staff. We're doing it remotely. We have special certificates. Rich, you want to help? And let's see what we can do to show some appreciation for our hardworking staff.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Today, we recognize the contributions of staff with their longevity milestones, which is another way of saying years of service. And in a particular order of most to least, we want to recognize four individuals today. And I can start off with Cindy Searson. So I imagine she was only 4 years when she 4 years old when she started this job, because she has 35 years with this agency, and we're proud as heck to have her here. She has done an outstanding job. She works very well with all the folks here and is very productive and adds a lot of value in her position as the engineering and compliance specialist. She started out in the administrative wing and has worked her way up over the years to the compliance and engineering specialists, and does an outstanding job, is very thoughtful and knowledgeable. And heck, she's got a lot of experience, which we're really happy to use. So I want to congratulate her with her 35 years of experience here, and we'll be giving her a selection of gifts that she can choose to commemorate that service period. I don't know if she's on or not. Oh yeah, I see her, there she is. Hey, Cindy. All right, so I'll let you do the next. I can add in Steve.
Sure. Well, I just want to say thank you on behalf of the board of directors and on behalf of the district, Cynthia. 35 years is quite a milestone, and it's an important role we fulfill. Our next employee that we will be honoring is Antonio Sotelo. He's one of our senior air monitoring specialists. 30 years. That's awesome. Rich, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I just got to say that this is one of the nicest guys that you'll ever want to work with. He is very accommodating. He works well without supervision, works well as a team member, does not complain, and seems genuinely happy with his job. And I really think that the air monitoring specialists have one of the best jobs here at the district. They get to be outside. They've got a lot of latitude on driving to our various monitoring stations, but Tony is always has time for the district to bring in new innovations. And as I said, never complains, seems to be genuinely happy, which makes me happy just to see him working. I vicariously enjoy his job through him sometimes. So 30 years is also an awful lot of time, but he has really been distinguished in these years of service, and he continues to improve, and we hope to have him for another 30 years.
Thank you. Let's give Antonio a round of applause there. Look at that. That's a good sight to see. Wonderful. Well, our next employee we'll be honoring is Bill Chevalier, supervising air monitoring specialists. We're thanking him for 15 years. Rich, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, once again, Bill is one of the nicest guys here too. I think there's something in the monitoring section that they must be breathing or drinking, but Bill does an outstanding job with the program. He has made many of improvements and enhancements. He started out as an air monitoring specialist or technician, and he's worked his way up to the supervisor. We're really proud to have him here. He does a lot. Most notably, he's really responsible for getting our new air monitoring sensor network up for wildfires. And just a great guy, always willing to go the extra mile. And I couldn't be more happy to have Bill as our supervisor here with the air monitoring program. So 15 years, congratulations, Bill.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Bill. And last but certainly not least, Miss Amy Climo, no stranger to the Zoom calls, engineering and compliance manager, 10 years with the district. Congratulations, Amy. Rich?
Yeah, so I don't know what else. Everybody knows Amy. Everybody likes Amy. She is really capable, and I don't know where I'd be without her. I don't know where the district would be without her. She really brings a lot to the district and complements us really well with her background in engineering. She also started off as a planning supervisor here and has sort of made the rounds of the district. She's like all the others that we've talked about today, she's willing to take on new assignments and challenges and seems to relish these types of opportunities and gets everything done. And her quality work is amazing. And I see nothing but great things from her now and into the future. And actually, it seems like she's been here at least 20 years just with all the work she's done. But we're really happy to have her and proud to have her as our compliance and engineering manager. And with everybody else, she'll be receiving an appropriate gift to commemorate her years of experience here with the district. So congratulations, Amy.
Thank you so much, Rich. We have a great culture, a proactive culture, and a positive reputation with the public, and it's because of our hardworking staff. So definitely want to commemorate and really celebrate these milestones. So thank you. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and get to our business at hand and jump into public comment. At this time, we'll welcome any members of the public that wish to speak to items not listed on the agenda. Let me just take a quick look and Siri between the two of us.
No public comments received at the office and no one.
Okay. There we go. Okay. Well, then our first item is an action item, and that is to adopt a resolution pursuant to AB 361, allowing us to continue to meet remotely given the COVID-19 pandemic and the state of emergency declared by our governor, Gavin Newsom. I don't know if we need much of a staff report on this. I think most of the directors are familiar with the pandemic and AB 361 by now. Rich, anything you'd like to add?
I'll just say that once again, we're here to consider EB 361 and an adoption of a resolution under the requirements of 361 that allows us to continue to meet via teleconferencing. I just mentioned that we're dark next month, so that may present some challenges to us, but I'll get back to you as soon as possible once we know if we need to have a special meeting or not, just to keep that going. And the way the planets align, we have 31 days, so we may have to actually have two meetings, but we'll definitely get back to you before and let you know what the requirements are. Other than that, I think we're good to act on this resolution adoption.
Great. Any questions from directors? Raise your hand. Seeing none, just a quick scan to the public to see if there's any members of the public on this one.
Steve.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and entertain a motion to approve item 6.
I'll move adoption of the resolution. This is Story.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second, Dillis.
Thank you, Jack. Okay, moved and seconded. Let's go ahead and call the roll there, Siri.
All right. Director Carbone. Director Friend.
Aye.
Director Kozumiki.
Aye.
Director Labar. Director Labar. Yes. Director Lopez. Chair McChain.
Yes.
Director Phillips.
Aye.
Director Story.
Aye.
Director Dillis.
Aye.
Director Coonerty.
Aye.
Director Labar. Director Eskew, have you joined us? No? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, passed.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll just go on to reports. The Budget Personnel Nominating Committee did meet, and we took action on number 16 on our regular agenda today, and that was the draft financial statements and independent audit report. We recommended approval by the full board. A great presentation by Mitesh. Hey, it's always nice when your net position's more than it was last year. That's all I have to report at this time. I don't know if there are any questions. Okay, moving on to Rich, you want to report on the advisory committee?
Yes, thank you, Chair. The advisory committee did not meet this month.
Okay, there we go. Just looking to see if there's any questions from the public, comments, not seeing anything. Thank you. We'll just go to comments and referrals from board members. Anything folks care to report on? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go to our report from Rich.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. First, let me just wish everyone happy holidays since we won't be meeting until February. So I'll try to keep my report pretty brief. There's a lot going on here. We don't have a lot on the agenda, though. So first of all, I'll just mention that I think Alan's got a doomsday clock countdown in his office, but I think he has 5 more days here with the agency. So we're going to have a little celebration for him tomorrow. So that's going to be a big loss to the district. And sorry to see him go, but happy to see him get on with his life. I know he's got a lot to do. So another vicarious enjoyment that we'll be having through Alan. And then I have some other bad news. One of our inspectors has also announced his departure from the district, and that's Leif Halverson. He's leaving to go to the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. We sort of expected this. He's a very talented individual, had a lot of knowledge and information that we took a great deal advantage of while he was here, especially in source testing. He's going to bring a lot of that experience as well as all the training we've given him up to the Bay Area. But I see him going far in his career. He's a really great guy and really smart and really great work ethic. So we're sorry to see him leave, but we're happy that he's continuing his career and he's going to be working for a very large district up north of us. So wish him congratulations. Just on a special note here, I think Siri reached out to the board members about getting some documentation of ethics training of all the board members. We're in the process of applying for a special district's Leadership Foundation Transparency Certificate of Excellence. So we need those documents to complete the package. We've turned in the package without some of those documents, but if you need ethics training, just let Siri know and we can set you up with online training, or if you need to have somebody come out, we're happy to do that as well. I just wanted to mention the e-bike program. We're going to be tweaking that a little bit, and we'll be working through the advisory committee on some changes to that. We've recently discovered that the Community Power has also developed an e-bike program. We sort of had a gentleman's agreement that we would try to be consistent so as not to confuse the public with our different programs. We don't mind the C-stacking involved with these types of incentives, but it really does help that we're not put in direct competition, or at least with getting the word out so that we leave some folks stranded. So we've heard some comments about how difficult it is to comply with some of the low income requirements. We still don't want to get into that business because that requires us handling secure information and all that. But we're going to see if we can work with Central Coast Energy Services to see if we can streamline that and make that available to more low income qualified residents. Then I'll just mention, since we have the rains here, you know, we've been putting this off now for 2 years, and it's because of COVID and trying to keep our budget pretty tight, but we're going to need a new roof. We just experienced leaks again in places that we've fixed in the past, and we're patching patches now, and it's not going to be cost effective for us to do that. And hopefully we'll get more rain, right? But we don't want too much rain. That there's also the sort of unintended costs that require us to repaint, you know, insides of walls and so forth when we experience leaks. I think the women's bathroom downstairs had this huge bubble that swelled up. The paint's really good. It was holding on to a couple gallons worth of water. So, but that destroyed the wellboard underneath it. So we'll be preparing to present that in next year's budget. That will be a roof replacement for the building here. Moving on to status in our departments. Engineering, I'm happy to announce that we will have a new engineer. His name is Fernando Pena, and he joins the engineering division team as an air quality engineer on Monday, January 10th. Fernando received a BS degree in chemical engineering from Cal Poly Pomona and a Master of Science degree in environmental engineering from Cal State Fullerton and an MBA from Cal State Dominguez Hills. So we really are looking forward to having Fernando start with us here at MBARD. And then on some unfortunate news, we received notice from Chevron USA that they want to cancel their permits for their Sargent Canyon cogeneration facility located in San Ardo. Actually, the facility shut down their operations back in December 2016, but kept their permits going. Now they want to remove the equipment from site. And unfortunately, this represents about a $17,000 hit to our revenue stream. We received 7 odor complaints from Watsonville residents located in the vicinity of Lakeview Road and Highway 152. There's several seasonal lakes in that area, and our inspector, Sandy Hartunian, has been in contact with Santa Cruz Environmental Health, and it's believed the odors were from College Lake, which is a naturally occurring lake. And as we've seen in other areas, when the water recedes due to drought conditions, it sometimes can cause outgassing, namely H2S, hydrogen sulfide gas, and that can be a source of the odors. So the only way to take care of that is to have, you know, more rain. So we called up some additional rain, and it looks like we were blessed with a couple inches. So we hope that that will take care of the source of odor as that gets covered up and rehydrated. And then just our standing item about odor complaints in the marina area, we received zero complaints this past month. Moving on to planning and air monitoring, our wood stove changeout program is still going strong. We've had 33 applications, and we're about halfway through the program, which is about funded at about $87,000-$88,000. Our Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program is continuing along. We've so far processed or are processing 95 applications. And so we've got about $276,000 remaining in that program as well. Our San Lorenzo Valley Spare the Air Program began in November. And this is, as many of you know, when we have decreasing or declining meteorological conditions, we call spare the air alert to hopefully have folks voluntarily ban or not burn wood in their to heat their homes. We've had some difficult and some inversions, so we usually don't have that problem when we have storms moving through. So the air is pretty dynamic at that point, but we're concerned about stable, stagnant air conditions, which concentrate pollutants along the ground. And then lastly, we're going to be holding our second round of interviews for our air quality planner position that we have open. And hopefully in February, I'll be reporting the successful new hire or hires. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rich. We'll go to Director Dillis.
Yes. Thanks, Rich. I have one question about the roof. I know I heard you say that it's more cost effective for us to stop patching and put a new roof on, which I'm very supportive of. I just want to make sure, is it clear that we can wait till next year? Because, you know, sometimes roofs get worse unexpectedly. So do you have a confidence that you think we'll be okay through the waiting till next year and not make our situation worse?
My crystal ball says that we'll probably be okay, even if we had a pretty dire situation here right now, based on we had some problems with our heating system this past week too, and it took we were on a 2-week scheduled visit from the repairman. So even if we wanted a new roof, I don't think it would probably take us a couple of months to get it scheduled anyway. So hopefully we can get through this wet season okay. And if we have to, we can take, we'll probably be doing some stopgap repairs. And, you know, we will be that neighbor in the neighborhood with the blue tarp over their roof.
Yeah.
Until we can get it done in summer, which is usually the best time. And we're looking at doing a sort of a membrane type of system rather than the gravel and tar system that we currently have. So we hope that that will last us a lot longer in the future.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else? Seeing none there. We'll just go to the public real quick, see if anybody out there has questions or comments on item 7. Seeing none. Okay, thank you very much. Or item 9. Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda. We have 6 items on the consent agenda. Would anybody like an item pulled? Okay, seeing none, go into the public real quick here.
We didn't receive anything at the office.
Okay, bring it back to the board and we'll take a motion on the consent agenda.
Lopez, so moves.
Okay. I'll second, ask you.
Great, moved and seconded. Siri, let's call the roll.
Who first? Who?
Lopez on the motion and ask you on the second.
Got it, thank you. All right. Director Phillips.
Aye.
Director Story.
Aye.
Director Dillis.
Aye.
Director Lopez.
Aye.
Chair McShane.
Yeah.
Director Eskew.
Aye.
Director Labar? Director Labar? Director Fran?
Aye.
Director Coonerty?
Aye.
Director Kosumiki?
Aye.
Director Carbone?
Aye.
One last time, Director Labar? All right, passed unanimously.
Okay, thank you very much, Siri. Okay, so that brings us to our regular agenda. We have one item. I see Mitesh is with us. This is going to be great. So, Rosa, would you like to go ahead and get us started on item 16?
Sure, thank you. Good afternoon, directors of the board. This agenda item is to receive and accept the draft financial statements for the year ended June 30th, 2021. Annually, we do an independent audit. It's been conducted by Badawi and Associates for the last several years. At this meeting, Mitesh Desai from Badawi, he's a CPA and principal. He will be doing a presentation on the financial statements. So Mitesh, do you want to go ahead and get started?
Thank you, Rosa. Let me share my presentation really quick. Right. So I think you should be able to see my presentation now, and apologize if it's in a PDF format. It's just I don't have an extra screen at the moment. So, well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. So we've completed our audit for the district for 2021, and just wanted to present a couple of the information about the audit, the scope, and the team. So we'll go over the engagement team, deliverables of our audit, the areas of primary emphasis, which is just some areas we focused on, not necessarily that we only did those areas. The auditor's report, so the results of the audit, and also look at the financial statements and 2 years prior to kind of give you an idea of how things are trending over the past 3 years. There are some communications we are required to make as the auditors, so we'll just be going over those communications, briefly touch on the new accounting pronouncements coming the district's way, and I'll leave some time at the end if there's any questions or if we'd like to discuss anything, we can do that. So moving on to slide number 4, this is our engagement team. So it was pretty much just myself as the partner of the audit, and I had one staff that was assisting me remotely, Tim. Who's doing a lot of boots on the ground things and doing the test work. We also have someone who's supposed to be independent of our engagement team, a quality control reviewer. This is needed also because we assist in preparing the financial statements. So as a safeguard or control over independence, we have an independent reviewer doing a review of the report again, just to make sure we didn't miss anything ourselves. But that was our engagement team. The deliverables and scope of the audit. So our responsibility as the auditors and the scope of the audit is to opine on the district's financial statements. So even though we assist in preparing those financial statements, we're purely just putting that together with some direction from management. And our main role is to audit those financial statements and audit those numbers to make sure they are presented fairly. And secondly, we have our communication to those charged with governance, which is essentially a letter. It's not necessarily required when we present verbally to the board, but it's another letter that we publish going over our required communications. Our areas of primary audit emphasis, and these are risks that we look at as part of the audit. The first bullet point, improper revenue recognition. Please don't interpret that as there was anything wrong with how the district recognizes revenue and we decided to audit revenues because of that. Improper revenue recognition is just a risk that's inherently that exists in all audits. And we actually are required in our work papers to explain why we didn't identify it as a significant risk if we decide not to consider it a significant risk. So we address this risk by performing tests of license, permits, and fees. And we also look at the reconciliation on DMV surcharges. We review allowance for uncollectible accounts. And we also look at the district's reconciliation of grant revenues and unearned grant receivable, revenues. We also consider pension and OPEB to be a significant risk area. And so we do assist management a little in this area, but we mainly obtain information from the district's actuary and from CalPERS. We obtain audit reports from CalPERS auditors. We perform testing of data transmitted to CalPERS and provided to the district's actuary. And we review journal entries or assist with journal entries for management to record for pension and OPEB. Looking at the financial statements, but our auditor's report. So we've issued an unmodified opinion. And what an unmodified opinion is, it just essentially, it's more, more commonly referred to as a clean opinion. What that means is that our financial statements are presented fairly in all material respects. Material respects meaning that we, as part of the audit, we identify what's material and we look at things that are material and we look at things on a sampling basis. So we can't provide absolute assurance. We provide reasonable assurance. So that's what that means in terms of all material respects. Significant accounting policies have been consistently applied. Estimates are reasonable and disclosures are properly reflected in the financial statements. Those accompany the statements subsequent to them. So looking at the financial statements over the past 3 years. So these are the government-wide financial statements. This is just a slide looking at the assets and deferred outflows of resources over the past 3 years. So you'll notice nothing significantly changed here. You have slight increases in your cash and investments. This is just mainly due to your revenues being higher than your expenditures for this year. And with your capital assets, there was a slight decrease this year, and that's mainly a result of depreciation expense. So every year, capital assets are depreciated, and there were no new acquisitions this year. So no capital acquisitions. So the net effect was a decrease in your capital assets. Looking at your liabilities and deferred inflows of resources. So you'll notice here, the main variances that you'll notice are in other liabilities. And I think other liabilities is just almost all, or if not just mostly, your unearned revenues. And the district's unearned revenues are mainly unspent grant proceeds. So as part of the district's operations, you receive grants from various state and federal entities for your programs. And you're only allowed to recognize revenues when they are spent. Until they are spent, you would record them as unearned revenues. So you'll notice that in 2020, the district received a large amount of grant revenues, and then they spent them in 2021, which resulted in a decrease. Your long-term liabilities, I think that mainly includes compensated absences and your other post-employment benefit payables. So I think the decrease that you'll notice in 2020 is mainly from your other post-employment benefits, where there was a new valuation done last year and there was some updated information and updated assumptions. So you ended up with a re-evaluated liability, and it was significantly decreased. From that to this year, there hasn't been any significant change. With your net pension liability, there was an increase this year. And this is mainly as, it's a bit of a unique situation when you participate in a cost sharing plan with CalPERS, because the net pension liability isn't necessarily calculated the same way as a large city, perhaps, like, for example, city of San Mateo or another city that participates in what they refer to as PERF A, which is the agent multiple employer plan. With the PERF A, you get a dedicated trust. So when you get your valuation report from CalPERS, they calculate your liability and they know how much money you have in assets, and they take the difference and tell you what the net pension liability is. When you're in a cost sharing plan, the actuary calculates a liability for everyone in the plan in total. And then they give you a allocation factor, which may be based on a number of things. And you pretty much record a share of the total plan. So essentially when the total plan goes up and your percentage doesn't change significantly, your share of the total also goes up. So it may be impacted by others, what others are doing in the plan, in a sense. So it's not necessarily the best figure. It's the best audited amount that you can come up with, which is why GASB went in this direction. But I think the more accurate figures are probably from CalPERS funding valuations, where that actually tells you your specific funded status, in a sense. Slide number 12, this is just looking at net position, which is pretty much your equity that you have. Equity meaning your assets minus your liabilities. And we categorize equity into three components here. So we have net investment in capital assets, restricted, and then also unrestricted. So net investment in capital assets is, since there was no debt that was issued for to acquire capital assets, your net investment in capital assets is just your capital assets. Restricted for various things. These restrictions are external. These are monies that have been externally restricted by laws, regulations, or grants that you can't really use for any purpose other than that specified by those laws, regulations, or grants. And then you have unrestricted, which is supposed to be the money that you have available to spend as you wish. So when you have a negative unrestricted net position here, it's a bit hard to evaluate, especially since the implementation of GASB 68 that recorded your net pension liability on your balance sheet. In the past, that liability wasn't on the books. So you would probably have, everyone would probably have a large unrestricted net position. Only if you're in problems, you would probably have a negative one. So a negative unrestricted net position nowadays is not necessarily a bad thing. It depends how much, what's causing it to get negative and how negative is it. But pretty much if we compare this negative net position to your net pension liability, you'll see that your net pension liability is 8.8 million and your unrestricted, negative unrestricted net position is 1.3 million. So essentially, if you add back your net pension liability here, you would have an unrestricted net position of about 7 million if you didn't account for the for that long-term liability. It's not necessarily, because your net pension liability is not something that needs to be paid off immediately. It's probably something that's going to be paid over 30 or more years, probably. So it's not necessarily the end of the world that you have a negative unrestricted net position. This is just looking at your changes in net position over the past 3 years. And the big swings that you see here are mainly as a result of grant programs where the district issues grants for various purposes. And I believe there's just a lot of timing that goes into when you can issue that grant. So there's a lot of procedural things and also the needing of accumulating funds for those programs before you can start issuing those grants. So it's always, if you look back a few years, it's always going up like this and down. So it's every 2 years, those grant payments are going out. And probably maybe that's something to look at next year. Let me add another line to see how much are those grant payments. So that way you get a better picture of what's happening in other things. But that's really what's causing the big swings here. Looking at the general fund, so this is a different basis of accounting when you're looking at the general fund versus the government-wide financial statements. Your general fund uses a modified accrual basis, which was designed more for budgeting purposes. So when you're looking at unrestricted fund balance, you really take out things that are long-term. So you don't include capital assets and you don't include long-term liabilities such as your pension liabilities and your, if you had debt, loan payables, those liabilities wouldn't be included. It's meant to reflect your available monies for the following year. So you'll see here that your fund balance actually increased this year from 6.6 to 7.4 million. And your expenditures decreased this year, mainly attributable to those grant payments that occur every other year. And then we're comparing that to each other to determine, well, in terms of number of months, how many months can you operate with this unrestricted monies? In the unlikely situation, you won't have any more money. And the GFOA recommends about 2 to 4 months, and the general fund has a lot more than that. So in terms of financial position, you're in a good spot in relation to that recommendation. On slide number 16, we're just looking here at the pension contributions. And you know, nothing to be overly concerned here that it's going up. Every agency, this chart looks almost identical. Obviously, the larger the entity, they're talking about bigger dollars. Smaller entities have smaller dollars. But the trend is the same and looks almost in the same rate, pretty much. But it's not necessarily by accident that this is happening. It's due to CalPERS smoothing out gains and losses. And there's an unfunded liability, so they're trying to catch up gradually. So you'll see this increase in the future as they're trying to still catch up on the unfunded liability to pay it off. But it's consistent with others. But just plan that it's going to probably continue going up, if not, maybe not going up as much, or may go up slightly more, but probably at around this rate. Also, another thing with your pension liability is that it's an estimate, and it's an estimate that's really reliant on the discount rate that's used. Pretty much what the actuary does, in probably a very oversimplistic way, is the actuary projects out based on your current retirees and current employment of who's, you know, eligible for CalPERS benefits. They project out how much will be paid in benefits. So how much is currently being paid, how much will be paid next year, how much will be paid 20 years from now. And they take all those future payments and discount them and add it all up, and they come up with a liability as of a measurement date. Those adjustments from future years rely on a discount rate. So the standards require that you would use your estimated long-term expected rate of return on your investments to discount it, which was 7.15%. If CalPERS was in a very dire state, they would actually be required to use a much lower discount rate. But they have, I guess, they're not necessarily in the dire straits. But in the note disclosures, we disclose had the discount rate been 1% lower or 1% higher, because at the end of the day, it's an arbitrary number, it's an estimate, what would be your liability? So if you wanted to be more conservative when you're planning or budgeting, you could look at a very dire situation where the liability is 13.5 million and see what is your financial position look like. And also you have a more optimistic 4.8 million to see where you're at. At the end of the day, it's mainly for informational purposes. It's not to necessarily say that the number should have been this or that. It's just to give you a ballpark of where we're looking at. Looking at other post-employment benefits, so this is the district's retiree healthcare plan. So this is a trend of your OPEB contributions. So unlike pension, these are not contractually required. So there's no requirement for you to contribute monies into the plan. It's more of your own board policy decision making as to whether you want to fund the plan, how much you want to fund the plan. But you'll see that they have been gradually going down. And I don't believe this is not necessarily because you've made that other entities may make this decision if they're in a strap for cash that they decide to start making lower contributions. This is a result of your liability going down and your recommended contribution as a result is going down each year as well. And then this is on slide number 18 here, we have your funded status. So the net OPEB liability or the unfunded liability is your total liability in a sense, or your actuarial liability less any monies that are restricted to pay for those liabilities. So your plan assets are your trust and your actuarial liability is what the actuary has projected out will need to be paid. And the difference is your unfunded liability, or if you're in a very favorable situation, you may have an asset. But you'll see here that there was that big swing where the actuary for the measurement date, June 30, 2019, remeasured and came up with a lower measurement of that liability. And because you've been funding the plan every year, your unfunded liability is going down significantly each year. It's going down each year, but you seem to be in a much better spot than 2 years ago. Now, similarly, with pension, we have in the financial statements as a disclosure for sensitivity. So similarly, like pension, we compare what would be the number, what would be your liability had the discount rate been different. So, you know, between 500,000 to 200,000 would be your OPEB liability had the discount rate been 1% lower, 1% higher. With regards to your OPEB liability, another significant assumption is your the healthcare cost trend rate. The healthcare cost trend rate is just the actuary's assumption as to how quickly healthcare costs will increase in the future. So, I mean, they look at trends and get an idea of what's the best percentage to use based on past what has occurred. But had those percentages been 1% lower or 1% higher, you'll see that if they assume that healthcare costs would go up slowly, you would have a liability of 172,000. If they anticipated that the costs would go up more aggressively, you would have a liability of about 500,000. So nothing, I guess, it doesn't look that significant as it was with pension. Just some required communications. I'll try to make this brief as possible. Especially since an audit, everyone gets a different idea or interpretation of what's an audit, especially auditing a governmental entity. This is just some clarifications as to our responsibilities as the auditors. We're responsible to give an opinion on the financial statements, whether they've been prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. And we do that by performing our various auditing procedures, such as vouching transactions, doing analyticals, tracing information to supporting documents. We evaluate internal controls by interviewing staff, looking at samples of documents for proof that internal controls were performed, evaluating compliance with laws and regulations, looking at the tone at the top, ensuring the financial statements are clear, transparent, and also to communicate the results of the audit. Management are responsible for everything else. So they are responsible for the financial statements. So even though we assist in preparing the financial statements, we prepare them with management's direction and review. And they are responsible for establishing the internal controls. So even though we evaluate them and maybe provide recommendations when we find things that can be tightened up, at the end of the day, management are responsible for putting those internal controls in place, providing us with all the information requested for the audit, adjusting the financial statements when they are material misstatements, establishing internal control in relation to fraud, informing us if there were instances of fraud and to comply with laws and regulations and take corrective action on audit findings. Our responsibility also includes independence. So the stakeholders, the board, you're looking for an audit that's free of bias. So as auditors, we are required to maintain our independence so that we don't feel biased or don't perceived as being biased. And we do that by following rules set by the AICPA and the Board of Accountancy. Things that would violate our independence would be performing bookkeeping, maintaining the books, taking on a management role, adjusting the financial statements without management's approval or agreement and or review. So we don't provide any of those services as part of our work. The timing of the audit was performed in accordance with our engagement letter. These are a listing of the new accounting pronouncements that were implemented during the year. Nothing that significantly impacted your financial statements. Statement 84 discusses fiduciary activities, and after re-evaluating and looking at some of the clarification guidance that came out with 84, the only thing that we've done is recommended removing the trust fund, the OPEB trust fund, from fiduciary activities, as you're not necessarily in control of those assets. That's PAR's asset at the end of the day. And it's being held for the retirees of the plan or the participants of the plan. So at the end of the day, the district has no fiduciary role in those funds. It's purely between PARs and the participants, even though you may provide direction. Otherwise, the others didn't really apply. Regards to management judgment and estimates, so in addition to pension and OPEB numbers, other significant estimates include the allowance for uncollectible accounts, and then the useful life of capital assets. The useful lives go into estimating depreciation expense. So you're only allowed to, or you're supposed to depreciate things over there, an asset's usefulness. So those are judged by management and we evaluate those. In terms of the sensitive disclosures, so the note disclosures accompany the financial statements and they can be quite lengthy, but this is just a listing of the most significant ones. Note one, which is a summary of significant accounting policies, provides just a lot of information about methodology and policy applied by the district in deriving their numbers. Cash and investments provides information about the components of cash and investments, investment policies, investment maturities and such. Capital assets provides a breakdown of the components of what capital assets does the district have, not necessarily in detail, but at least in regards to some summarized classification, and also provides information as to what was the activity during the year. And then the retirement plans and other post-employment benefit disclosures include a lot of information about benefits being offered, contributions that were made, the breakdown of deferrals, and then also a lot of information about the actuaries' assumptions that went into deriving those numbers. We had no difficulties in performing the audit, no significant adjustments or no past audit adjustments, no risk or exposures identified, no disagreements with management, no material weaknesses were identified in internal controls during our audit. Before we finalize the audit, we'll receive a representation letter from management. And we're not aware of any consultations with other auditors that was done by management. No other material written communications, no material uncertainties relating to events and conditions. So what that means is just whether we believe that the district will be in operations in the near future or not. So we have no concerns about that. So we do have some clients that we did have to give them a going concern because they're just in a difficult situation. Fraud and legal acts, we didn't identify any fraud or illegal acts that were performed or, I guess, internal to the district. I believe there was just one external attack that occurred, unfortunately. But that's not necessarily an act of the district or its employees. In terms of new accounting standards, so this is a listing of all the accounting standards, at least as of now, that are out. But in terms of how many really it would apply to the district's books, most likely it would just be statement 87 next year, which changes the accounting for leases. And then 2023, there's some accounting that will change for subscription-based IT arrangements. So I believe some of the software the district uses is cloud-based, and it's more of a subscription-based type of arrangement rather than software that you've bought, which seems to be the trend, how all these different softwares are going. No one wants you to buy to own anymore. You have to just keep paying it on a monthly or annual basis. With that, I'd like to thank the district for allowing us to perform on the audit, and I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any, or discuss any matters.
Thank you very much, Mitesh. Very thorough and very helpful. We'll look to directors with questions. Director Dillis.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. You explained things. I'm a finance person, but you seem to explain things in a not just a technical way, so I appreciate that. My question is just, why aren't these final, a final audit report? It's called a draft. Is that just because you're waiting for the letter of representation you mentioned for management, or might anything in these reports change?
I think, the reason it's being drafted, I think this is in the practice in the past, and you can look at it to change in the future. And the with regards to presenting to the board or presenting to committees, sometimes some clients prefer to go with the draft in case the board or committee have members have any suggested changes that they would like, wording changes, or they would like something updated in the MD&A. So keep it as a draft until we go through all the procedures and finalize that at the end. But I believe there was just one thing that was identified in the draft. It was a very immaterial thing relating to the unearned revenues that we'll be adjusting, which is, I think, just a $10,000 unearned revenue adjustment or something in that nature, which is a very small amount. But otherwise, there shouldn't be any other changes to the numbers. I think that's my understanding as to why we've always gone with the draft to the committee, because we have the committee meeting, and right after the committee meeting, we have the board presentation, so we can't necessarily finalize it in between. But we've kept that process, but it's something that we can always change in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, questions, Director Story.
Yes, thank you. Under the required communications items, I know one of them was listed as tone at the top. I was kind of unclear as to, you know, what that is and how you would evaluate it, and how is our tone?
Nice. It's a very, I've been asked that many times, and it's a very challenging thing to explain. It's a challenging thing necessarily to do in a checklist audit in a way, meaning that it's not a specific thing that we do to address the tone at the top. It's more of looking at things as we're actually doing the audit, which is actually one of the challenges in some of our audits where we do it 100% remote. But it's just in terms of how does management communicate with the board? How does management respond to rules and regulations? Do they follow their own rules and regulations that are set? When people violate rules and regulations, do they take remedial action on those employees? So that's more of, I guess, tone at the top. Is it, I guess the idea with tone at the top as when standards were written is that, and it's not necessarily, it's something that's probably true when you do look at instances of where there were problems or where problems were identified when they do a post-mortem and start evaluating what happened. It's always that you know, someone at the whole organization, when the board or when upper management don't follow the rules and they act in a certain way, that employees also feel that it's okay to act that way. So it's a kind of an umbrella term that impacts our risk of the whole audit in a sense, because if we feel that it's something actually that we gain also from a multiple, like over the number of years of the contract, because, you know, in the first year of the contract or the first year of the audit contract, the first year we may not notice something that, wow, okay, that was something that, you know, if you're being pressured to issue the report quickly, or, you know, we're providing some recommendation and management is taking it very lightly and they don't think it's important. We have, you know, provided recommendations year after year and, you know, they don't want to take it. You know, you have regulatory agencies that are providing audit findings and maybe management doesn't take it very as a critical thing. Similarly with accounting standards, which unfortunately with our GASB, we call them GASB, but they keep issuing new accounting standards almost every year. And for not necessarily just for out of boredom, but sometimes when when it's taken very lightly, or you know, we don't need to really comply with that, or we don't care too much about it, just tell us what we need to do. It's more of an attitude thing that we get a feeling of tone at the top, but so that's how we kind of evaluate the tone at the top. But it's not necessarily that we follow a list of procedures. We read the minutes, you know, see what's going on within the board. We determine if there are policies and procedures in place. We kind of look at whether rules are being followed, not necessarily just by, are expected just from lower staff, but also from everyone of the organization equally. And that pretty much just, you know, if we feel concerned about, you know, things are being taken too loosely, then we plan our audit that we'll do a bit more digging than we normally would. So I hope that answers your question somewhat. It's a very challenging thing. I've been asked before, but I don't know if I always provide a perfect answer.
No, that was very helpful. Just to understand, I had not heard that term before in an audit context. I can see how it's very important, and I'm sure we scored very high in terms of tone. So thank you so much.
Very helpful. Thank you. Directors, any further questions for Mitesh? Just looking. If none, we'll go to the public, just checking to see if there's anybody that's raised their hand. And anything received, Siri?
Nothing received at the office.
Okay, so then we'll come back. So we are looking for a motion to receive the draft audit and financials. So exists.
Move approval, Phillips.
Okay.
Second, Story.
Okay, it's properly moved and seconded by Phillips and then Story. Siri, let's go ahead and call a vote.
All right, Chair McShane.
Yes.
Director Eskew. Director Eskew?
I see. Hey, you got me. Aye. Thank you.
Director Phillips.
Aye.
Director Dillis.
Aye.
Director Kosumiki.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Director Lopez.
Aye.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Thank you. Director Friend.
Aye.
Director Coonerty.
Aye.
Director Story.
Aye.
Approved unanimously.
Thank you. Okay. So that's good news. We have no further business today. So we'll go ahead and just adjourn and want to wish everybody a very happy and terrific holiday season. Thank you for joining for our meeting today. Happy New Year.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.